before we get going on this week's podcast, I want to take a moment to tell you about something exciting for high school sports fans across the country. SB Live Sports has launched a free iPhone and Android app featuring the latest California high school sports news, scores, videos, polls, photos, podcasts, player rankings, and much more. With the SB Live Sports app, it is now even easier to follow your favorite team with real-time scores and news alerts, as well as video highlights, podcasts, photo galleries, rankings, game coverage, and much more. The app delivers all the content you want in one convenient place. The SB Live Sports app features exclusive content from on-the-ground reporters across the country, and it's your number one source for California high school sports fans, with coverage from reporters Lance Smith, Bodie DeSilva, and me, Connor Morissette. The SB Live Sports app is available at no charge in the Apple App Store and Google Play Store. Download it today. Welcome to the SB Live California podcast. I'm your host, Connor Morissette, alongside Lance Smith and Bodie DeSilva. Bodie's got a championship football game in San Diego in the Open Division this weekend, and Lance and I have some semifinal games, and Bodie as well has some semifinal games we'll be going to. So it's all coming together in football. Really exciting times. Crazy, crazy that it's going this fast. Lance, how are you doing? I know you'll be at St. John Bosco's game as they host Servite this week. That should be a great one. How are things with you?
I'm great, and you know how pumped I am for this game. I've been looking forward to this one, that projected 2-3 matchup since the season started. And the fact that last time they played a couple weeks ago wasn't that great doesn't diminish it at all, because I think this one's going to be way better. So I'm pumped. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. And we'll get into our thoughts on that game. I have a few different opinions there, so I'm excited to dive into that with you. Bodie, the Open Division Championship in San Diego, Cathedral Catholics had a lot of success recently, but you give Carlsbad a chance, right?
Yes. I mean, they've been, throughout the later part of the spring season and all of this season, they've been 1-2 for me. I've given Cathedral the edge just because anytime they've played a San Diego team, it's been by multiple touchdowns, and their two losses are to Centennial and De La Salle, and you can't hold that against them because no one else in San Diego would have scheduled those games. So Carlsbad, though, you look back, they've won 16 in a row going back to the 2019 season when they lost in the Open Division title. And the game before that, they won on the road at Cathedral. So interesting that these two teams, it's not really someone who would schedule each other. That hasn't been the case, but this is now the fourth straight postseason that they'll have met, five of the last six. So there's definitely a lot of familiarity there. Obviously, we know teams change over when in high school. You get your two or three classes through there on one team. But I think this is going to be a really good game. Paolo Barak, Carlsbad's star senior running back, has been back for a few weeks and been really unstoppable since then. And we know Julian Sands, one of the best quarterbacks, not just in California, but the entire country, and only a sophomore. So I think offensively, if they can give enough time up front, Cathedral's always got a great defensive line, and Jackson Moy, the Stanford commit, leads it this year. But they can hold up front. I think they can score with Cathedral, and you have to think with Cathedral's offensive line and Lucky Sutton that they'll be able to score on the other side. So I'm thinking somewhere in the 30s, but Carlsbad definitely has a shot in this one for me.
Awesome. We'll get your official prediction in a little bit. Let's start with, I know it's the middle of the week, but let's start with where we were at last week and just quickly recap what we learned. I'll go first. So I saw Etiwanda in the Division III Southern Section playoffs beat Loyola on the road, 28-21. Etiwanda was ahead 28-7, and they let Loyola get back into it a little bit. If Etiwanda people are listening to this, they'll say the referees really didn't help them and they gave Loyola a shot. There were some questionable calls, but that's just the way it goes sometimes. And I'll be honest, though, say Loyola had fought back to tie it up, I definitely would have had to have written something about the officials. So just in that sense, I was glad Etiwanda hung on. Of course, have to maintain neutrality, so that's the only reason I was happy they held on. But, you know, it's just some weird calls. Anyway, I want to talk about Etiwanda, though, just the evolution of where they were a few years ago. I wrote in my story after the game how they've always been a basketball school. Now they're becoming a football school. And of course, you're only as good as the guys on the team, but their coach, Nick Baez, I think deserves a lot of credit for what he's done there. He's been coaching there since 2019. In his first year, 6-6, they won a playoff game. The year before that, when he wasn't there, they didn't make the playoffs. In the spring, 5-0. This year, 12-0. So he's clearly turned it around. And going on the road and beating Loyola, I know Loyola isn't what they used to be, but the atmosphere was still pretty good there. It is a storied program in LA. I thought that was the kind of win where you a team has. And even though they won the baseline league, which was really great for them, I thought in terms of playoff success, that was a win. You beat Loyola on the road, and that really puts you on the map. So I wrote about that as well. Now Etiwanda goes or hosts Sarah, so that should be a good game. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But I wanted to give Nick Baez a shout-out for what he's done at Etiwanda. My big takeaway from that game was that Etiwanda's found its coach for the foreseeable future, and that may have been obvious before the game, but just being there in person and seeing him work, I was very impressed. I thought he had a great night. I thought Etiwanda had a great night, and I'm glad to cover them because they've been in our 25 top teams all year, so it was good to see them. Lance, you saw Corona Centennial have an easy time with Mission Viejo. I think we all expected Corona Centennial to win, but maybe not by that many points. What were your takeaways from that one?
Yeah, I told you this right after the game that it was exactly what you said it would be on the last podcast, which is Mission Viejo can play with them for half or close to it. At one point, it was 14-13. And even getting to that point late in the second quarter was kind of an accomplishment for Mission Viejo. The reason I say that is Centennial got the ball to start with. They scored 66 or 64 seconds into the game, just shredded Mission Viejo's defense. And I said, oh, and then they forced a three and out. And I said, this game is over right now. And it wasn't over right now. Mission Viejo fought back in. They just made some adjustments. They were alternating their offense between some very spread stuff. And it looked like they went to a power eye or something along those lines a few times. So I thought that was a really cool way by Johnson of keeping Centennial's defense guessing. And it really worked for a bit. Whatever adjustments they needed to make in the first half on defense, they did. There were a lot of cases in that first half where Mission Viejo's defense was well positioned to get a stop, but especially on the run, but then they would just miss a tackle. So just kind of bad tackling really hurt them. But anyway, so it's 14-13 and in about, I want to say maybe 4 minutes left in the second half. And then Mission Viejo just started running out of gas before halftime. And I think it was 28-13 at the half, or maybe 21-13, I think. But before long in the third quarter, it was 35-13 and then 42. And well, early in the third quarter, it was just Mission Viejo was too tired. It looked like they had gotten beaten up a little bit by Centennial's physicality. And they just kind of ran out of not just physical energy, but they ran out of spark. And that was pretty much what you described with what you thought would be the case when we talked about it last week. And that's exactly what it was. Centennial, of course, for all the great parts of the field they have between all their 3- and 4-star defensive backs, their incredible O-line, two good quarterbacks, good running back, you can go on and on. They really do it by committee. Like that's what makes them so hard to match up with is there's never going to be one part of the field or one phase of the game where they're weak. We've talked for years about how well coached they are under Matt Logan. The whole is always more than the sum of their parts, and just being kind of without a weakness is what makes them so great year after year. And I think for Mission Viejo, that's kind of been their calling card this year is well-roundedness, as opposed to other years where, for instance, they had even more offensive explosiveness. And that was just a tough matchup. There just wasn't any one part of the game where Mission Viejo could make its edge, and they just got worn down. And that was it. And the fact that it ended up being, I think, 62-16. Definitely more lopsided than expected, but once the rout was on, the rout was on. I'll just leave it at that.
And now it's a date with Mater Dei at home in a game that I think will tell us exactly where Corona Centennial is, of course, because can't really get any better than Mater Dei this season. So again, thank you, Lance, for that breakdown. We'll talk about that game in a little bit, but let's get to Bodie. Bodie, you saw Carlsbad beat Torrey Pines, and I thought defensively Carlsbad had a pretty good night. Was that one of your main takeaways from that game too?
Yeah, definitely. So they played, this was a rematch, I believe, of a Week 7 league game where Carlsbad had to go 80 yards in the last 72 seconds and beat Torrey Pines by 1 point. And it couldn't have been much different this time. Carlsbad jumped out early, got a stop, scored, and then got a pick six. And next thing you know it, they're up 21-0. So I think the biggest thing that changed, and I know Carlsbad coach Thad McNeil said this after the game, I mean, clearly it's not just a difference of two players, but Carlsbad's senior running back, Paolo Barak, was back for this game and had a huge impact, as he has been over this last month. He's been healthy. And for Torrey Pines, their running back, Easton Clements, who in the first matchup had over 200 yards and three touchdowns, he's out for the season. So you can't just put a 35-point difference on two players, one being back and one being out this time. But I think just Carlsbad, I don't know if whether it's disrespected, but a lot of people, and myself, continue to have Cathedral at number one, and they go, look, we haven't lost in 2 years, and we think we're as healthy and good as we have been in a while. So they came out and just jumped Torrey Pines at home. A great crowd there, great student section. And really, until Torrey Pines scored there in the fourth quarter and it was already on a running clock, I mean, it was just Carlsbad taking over. I think the biggest thing besides those two players was that Anthony Ferrelli, a really good senior linebacker for Carlsbad, in the first matchup, he had to step in at running back, and that hurt them defensively because he's a very good linebacker that when he's playing offense can't really play as much on defense. And now that Barak's back, he can go there and just be there 100% of the time. So I think that'll be a key again this weekend against Cathedral, because you know they're going to run their wing tee. They're going to bring Lucky Sutton at you from a variety of ways early and often. And the more that they can shut down that run, the more they'll make Cathedral pass. And that's not something they want to do. They do have some capable guys in the passing game, but it's definitely run first. So Carlsbad was super impressive last week. And I think that just leads even more to this week of me thinking that they have a chance in this open division game. And when they haven't lost to 16 in a row, and they've played a really good schedule during that time, who am I to say otherwise in this case?
Thank you for that breakdown. Lance, let's get into a little bit of rapid fire predictions now, looking ahead to this week. So I want to start with Servite at St. John Bosco. It was 24-10 St. John Bosco last time in a game we were both at in the regular season. St. John Bosco, I don't think their defensive strategy will change too much. They bracketed T-Mac and did a nice job on him. Got a lot of pressure with their front seven on Noah Fifita, and Servite didn't look comfortable all night. Their only scoring drive, came after a Pierce Clarkson fumble that gave him possession right in the red zone, so they had a very short field. So a couple things I'm looking for in this game. First, how is Servite going to adapt what St. John Bosco does on defense? How are they going to adapt to what they do? Sean Coley, the offensive coordinator for Servite, I don't want to say he had a tough game against St. John Bosco the first time. It's behind them. The whole team was off. It wasn't just one person. But he's in charge of that offense. How will they respond? I'm looking to see how he coaches in this one and what they do a little bit differently. And then something else that I thought, both sides were a little bit lucky, and I say that quote-unquote, you know, fingers in the air, you can't see on the podcast, but that thing with two fingers people do when they talk like that. And what I mean by that is this. I thought St. John Bosco, on Pierce Clarkson's two long touchdown passes, Servite did a pretty good job defensively until they didn't. And what I mean by that is they had chances to sack Clarkson, and he just evaded the pressure and threw passes to running backs who just worked their way back to the quarterback and ended up scoring. Servite, they had some chances to get to Clarkson. He evaded them, and they scored. They weren't how those plays were drawn up. And then I thought Servite turning St. John Bosco over was fortunate. They had a blocked field goal. Rayshon Luke really inexplicably fumbled a ball that it looked like he tried a lateral. I don't think Bosco's going to do that. So when I say both teams were a little fortunate, that's what I mean. Overarching, my point is this. I think Servite is running out of gas a little bit. They didn't look great against Santa Margarita, bar Tetroa McMillan intercepting three passes. I feel like St. John Bosco is a terrible matchup for them. St. John Bosco's defense is so good. I like the Braves in this one, and I think it might be by a bigger margin than last time. I think Servite's going to struggle again, and I'm picking St. John Bosco. So that's my little 60-second to 90-second synopsis. What do you think, Lance?
Man, you have me convinced based on the way you broke that down. Yeah, it's true. I mean, I would have wanted so coming out of that regular season game, my thoughts were, yes, Servite was flat. They didn't play well, but they were also just flat. They looked exhausted from the modern day game. Before that game, you said you thought that would be the dynamic, and it sure as heck was. And I said, okay, that's fine. They're going to build that momentum back up against whoever they face in the first round. Obviously, Santa Margarita's defense is great, but they've had their way away with them so far in two previous meetings this year. So I thought that would be more of a 48, 50 point offensive burst from them. So yeah, 35 or whatever it was doesn't really have me that convinced. So yeah, I guess because of that, yeah, I'm kind of sold that Servite is running out of gas, and that doesn't mean I'm going to put it past them to come out and play one of their best games of the season, because outside of their sort of windedness, this would be a game where I'd say, okay, even though they took their knocks during league play against the two Goliaths, this is going to be when Servite makes that statement win, and I still think they're capable of it. I have no doubt that after being clamped in a way they've never been clamped during this era, they're going to make that. They've been thinking since then about whatever offensive adjustments they have to make. Maybe it's going to be a little bit less go routes and more. We're going to get that 5-yard screen pass or have T-Mac on a slant going up the middle and do it a little bit more incrementally. Maybe that's what it's going to be. But I think that's the X factor for me is Servite out of gas or are they not? If they are, then I think they're going to get walloped. If they have enough juice left, then I think they can work some magic. So I'm going to take, and of course, like you said, St. John Bosco didn't have their best offensive game in that matchup. And Servite was kind of lucky. It didn't get out of hand before the fourth quarter. So I wouldn't put it past St. John Bosco playing not just another incredible defensive game, but one of their better offensive games of the year. So if it ends up being a rout, then I won't be surprised. But I'm going to say St. John Bosco 32-27 in a game that Servite takes down to the last couple plays.
Interesting. I just think Servite is running out of gas. A lot of guys play both ways. When you go against this really tough Trinity League schedule and then you have to play a Trinity League team, not only in the semifinals now, but the game before in the quarterfinals, I think that's tough. T-Mac goes both ways. He's one of their best guys. Mason Graham goes both ways. And I know he's a guy who has that incredible motor. And I remember after the Modern Day game, he told Greg Biggins, I want to keep playing. Let's go play in the parking lot. So he doesn't get winded. But maybe he does get winded a little bit because it's so hard to go both ways in this type of environment. So I just worry about their lack of depth. I didn't love their game against Santa Margarita, again, like I said, outside of T-Mac. So I just think things are going in the wrong direction for them. And the perfect team to exploit those weaknesses is St. John Bosco, because they have six guys at every position, especially on defense. They have way too many talented guys on defense. And I just think it's a bad matchup. We can move on, Lance, unless you have a quick follow-up.
No, not really. Do you know if Emmett Mosley's going to be back?
I don't believe so. So, again, that's another loss for Servite.
That's a big loss.
Modern Day at Corona Centennial. The reason I wanted to go to this game was because, although I'm picking Modern Day, it'd be crazy not to. I think out of these two semifinal games, Centennial has a better chance to upset Modern Day than Servite does St. John Bosco in my head. That's why I wanted to be at this game. But I say that, and then I'll say this. Every year is different. Corona Centennial has gotten killed in every Modern Day game that I've seen them play the last couple of years. So take what I said earlier with a grain of salt. I just have more confidence in Centennial than I do Servite right now, which I'm a little bit surprised to hear come out of my mouth. I just think that's the truth, even though Centennial has struggled so much. Here's my big take in this game. Lance, we see Centennial get off to these against Mission Viejo, they didn't get off to a slow start, but they finish a lot stronger than they start in most cases. And you have to start really strong and finish really strong against Modern Day. It's obvious, but you can only play one half. And a couple times when I've seen Corona Centennial this year, they've played one really good half and maybe a good 8-minute stretch in the first half, but it hasn't been a complete game in the two games I've seen. And against Modern Day, you, of course, need the complete game. If they can do that, I think it'll be close. I still like Modern Day, even if Corona Centennial gives them their best shot. I hate the two quarterback system. To beat Modern Day, you need one guy to get into the rhythm. But like I said, if there is an upset, I think it is Centennial over Modern Day. So that's why I want to go to this game, but I got to pick Modern Day. How could you not? It's been 6 years, I think, since Centennial last beat them, and just so much has changed since then. I still feel like Modern Day is classic Modern Day. They'll win. Centennial, even though they're probably a little bit better than they've been in the last couple of years, I don't think they'll have enough. And I like the Monarchs in this game probably like 35-21. But that might even be too close based on how those two teams have played in the last few years.
Yeah, so in past years, let's take 2019 as an example. One of the things that really set Centennial apart was their pass rush, their defensive line. And against Mission Viejo, they played so well, and their front seven was swarming. They stopped the run extremely well. But I would have liked to see them get to Caden Semenza a lot more in the first half. I was surprised that they didn't. And if you're going to let Elijah Brown sit behind the pocket and fire away, it doesn't matter how good your secondary is. When you have the options, he's going to the CJ Williams and everyone else. I don't know. That's what I would have needed to be more convinced on from an X's and O's basis from that Mission Viejo game. In order to say, I really think they can give Modern Day a shot. That said, Modern Day against Norco, and of course, we know how Centennial stacks up against Norco. Modern Day started slow. They were kind of underwhelming, and of course, they ended up running away with it and clicking into high gear. But that's not something they can do again against Centennial and expect to have as easy of a time pulling away in the second and third quarters as they did against Norco. I don't expect them to do it. Like, from what I heard from people on the sidelines at that Centennial game who were talking to people who were at the Modern Day game, was it was just Modern Day looking flat and sleepwalking and thinking they could stomp Norco for four straight quarters without, you know, getting out of bed. And if that be the case, which it kind of sounds like it was, especially because once they did turn it on, they ran away with it. That's why I just don't think they're going to do that against Centennial. And I think even though Centennial's defense is so good and they have such a great secondary, and I mean the whole defense is so good, and not to call out their defensive line or anything, I mean they have a great front seven, but going against Modern Day and what it takes to pass rush them successfully is just a whole different beast from just about anyone else. That's what I would have needed to see. I will say, Pete, I mean, I think you said at the beginning of the season that in a scrimmage they played Modern Day really close. I give that some weight, not a ton, but some. Certainly people like neutral parties on the sidelines at the Mission Viejo game were so impressed with Centennial that I heard a lot of people say who are not Centennial affiliated that they think they can give Modern Day a real shot. I think I'm going to say Modern Day 42, Centennial something in the 17 to 21 range. But if it ends up being closer, I won't be shocked, but I'm not going to give Centennial, as great as they are, I'm not going to give them too much of a chance in this one. And I think next year might be a better year for them because they have so many great juniors on the team, and they have some sophomores in important places. But if it's going to be, if they're going to pull off or even come close to pulling off an upset, that's what I'm going to want to see from them is how are they going to keep Elijah Brown from just sitting back and launching? They stopped the run really well, but what are they going to do to get to Brown and just that passing game in general? But yeah, should be a great one. And definitely I like Servite's chance of pulling the upset more than them. But Centennial is so good that there's just no way for this game not to be extremely intriguing.
Huge game for the quarterbacks. I'm excited. Elijah Brown, that game every week I watch him, just how he responds to what the defense does. It's always been great. And then for Centennial, how will their quarterbacks perform? Because whenever I watch them, it's one has a better game than the other, and they are going to need both. Lance, let's quickly, I wanted to be quicker, I think, in D1, but it's so much to talk about. Let's move a little quicker, D2 and D3. So I'll just run through first game, Alamany at Inglewood. I think Alamany has the O-line to compete with Inglewood, but Inglewood usually eats one-dimensional teams alive. Saw it against St. Bonaventure when all they could do was run the ball and Inglewood knew it was coming and they stuffed them. All Alamany does is run the ball, but I think Alamany has better personnel. So we'll see that chess match play out. Alamany giving up 38 points and 35 points in their two games to Bishop Amat, even though those were both wins, is a concern I have because you don't want to be putting up that or giving up that many against Bishop Amat, I don't think. But I do expect this Inglewood game to be a little bit closer. I want to give myself credit, even though I really struggled picking last week. I did pick Inglewood. This week, though, I think it's going to be Alamany. I think Englewood's run is going to come to an end. The Alamany depth, the fact that they just have a few more guys, I like them over Englewood this week. But it's at Englewood, and I would not be surprised, again, if Englewood wins.
I'm going to take Englewood in a thriller. Even though the depth is there, I don't trust Alamany's passing game quite enough. And it's not even that they don't have the personnel. It's just that they haven't really proved it. Like they have the personnel, but they just haven't. They have been so dependent on that running game. Of course, you've seen Englewood. I haven't. I just like, I don't know why. I guess I really can't explain it, but I just really like Englewood in a 35-34 type game in this one. And I haven't seen Alamany this year. So, you know, I guess I haven't seen either of these teams this year. So I don't have a ton to offer on this one. But I like Englewood in a really close one. And no, I wouldn't be too shocked if Alamany won.
Yeah, I something has to give, I think, with Englewood that they've played. I just think that game last week that they had against Edison was such a tough battle, and Alamany had such an easier time with Bishop Ahmad. It's kind of like the Servite thing. Englewood has no depth. You need depth this time of year, and I think they might finally have some issues in terms of just running out of gas. So that's what I think there. I have Sierra Canyon over Orange Lutheran. I think Orange Lutheran has enough to keep it close, but Sierra Canyon, they got back to their dominating ways last week against Vista Marietta. I just think on paper, Sierra Canyon's better. I think at halftime, this game might be close, but I like Sierra Canyon maybe 35-24, somewhere in that neck of the woods. And I think as the game goes on, they'll wear Orange Lutheran down. I like Sierra Canyon's defense a lot. I think it's a tough matchup for Orange Lutheran. I'm taking the Trailblazers.
I'm going to take the Trailblazers too. And the fact that the Vista Marietta win was more convincing is the reason why. If not for that, I might take Orange Lutheran. And for the Lancers crowd, like, I want to say sorry for one quick thing. I feel like the last two pods, like I was listening to them after we put them out, and I felt like I wasn't giving Orange Lutheran enough love. Like, I've had them as a legitimate D2 championship threat the whole year, picked them in their first two rounds. But I remember, I think I said something along the lines of Sierra Canyon and the winner of Englewood Edison is really who I see as the eventual champion. And I don't think that was giving Olu enough credit. I mean, they beat Edison in a great game early in the season, and they almost beat Santa Margarita. It's not that I don't think they have what it takes. And I'm not going to count them out. I think they really could knock off Sierra Canyon, even though I'm not going to pick them to do so. The reason that I haven't given Olu quite as much credit as a playoff threat in the last 2 weeks, as much as I should have on the pod, is just more because of a little bit of inconsistency. Like, they played an outstanding game against Edison, only to go and very narrowly win in overtime or double overtime against Damien, who ended up not being as good of a team as I thought down the stretch of the season. They were leading against Santa Margarita in the regular season finale, and they just fell apart, but they choked a little at the end, blew the lead. So that was kind of why I didn't give Olu quite as much hype, but I do think they're having a great year, and I do see them as a legitimate threat. Like, I'm still going to give them some shot to not only win this game, but win the next one too. That said, I am going to take Sierra Canyon because, you know, we've talked so much about Sierra Canyon belonging in Division I, being the top dog in Division II, and now that they had that great win against Vista Marietta and they're the team that we think they are, supposedly, then that's why I'm going to take them to go all the way in Division II. But definitely don't want to disrespect Orange Lutheran.
Rod Sherman deserves a lot of credit as coach. Orange Lutheran would get into the D2 playoffs in years past because that's their playoff grouping, and they wouldn't have success. Him winning two games deserves a lot of credit because they weren't winning those games a couple years ago. So I hear what you're saying, Lance. Quickly in D3, Sarah at Etiwanda. I waxed poetic about Etiwanda at the beginning. I just wonder if this is the game where Sarah has a little bit more talent. They can stop Etiwanda on defense, and with Malik Murphy lead a game-winning drive at the end. I do think that this game is going to come down to the final seconds, whoever has the ball last. So I'll flip of the coin in my head, but I like Sarah in this game. I think they have something special working right now, so I'm picking them. And then on the other side of the bracket, how can you pick against Apple Valley right now? They've gone above and beyond the expectation because they've had so many guys out with injury, mainly Jaden Dennegal, their Michigan committed quarterback, and they've still won. So I don't think you can pick against them in the other side of that bracket. So it's looking like, for me, I'm picking a Sarah Apple Valley championship game.
Yeah, I like Sarah against Etiwanda, even though Etiwanda's been my D3 pick from before the playoffs even started. And that's not because I've lost faith in Etiwanda. It's because Sarah, now they're kind of healthier than the regular season, and they've hit their stride, and they're just kind of the team that we thought they would be coming into the year. And the team that we thought they would be coming into the year is a D2 contender. So I think that's just kind of a tough draw for all of Division III. So I'm going to take Sarah in that one. And again, I'm expecting Malik Murphy to just lead the way. I like the fact that they can run the ball very well. Like, they're not one-dimensional as much as some past years where they had an okay running game, but not a great one. I'm going to take Apple Valley in the other one too. I'm hoping Dennegal comes back this week. Him and their top running back, Caleb Most, are both week to week. I don't know when they'll come back, but they haven't been ruled out from returning in this postseason as it goes on. The reason I don't like this matchup for Apple Valley is because Roosevelt is really fast on both sides of the ball. And when they lost to Rancho Cucamonga, it was clear that that was, if they have a weakness, it's going to be really fast receivers and really fast swarming secondaries. And that's what's made Roosevelt so good this season. So I don't like this matchup for Apple Valley one bit. I think it could get really precarious, but I'm going to take them something along the lines of 24-21, just because I still think they're a better team, even though Roosevelt's a very, very good team that got slept on way too much this season. So that's what I'll take there. And I will take, unless something crazy happens in those games, I will take the winner of the Etiwanda-Sarah game if Dennegal doesn't come back. But that's something we'll revisit next week.
I've certainly been underrating Roosevelt as well, so I agree with you there, Lance. That should be a great game. Bodie, are you still alive there in the top center of my screen?
Yes.
Okay, great. Give us 5 minutes on San Diego playoff action this weekend, please.
Yeah, so there's some great semifinals down here and matchups that I hoped would happen during the year, and we're finally getting them now. Unfortunately, only get to one this weekend. I'm going to be at a Division I semifinal. It's a rematch from Week 10, and that'll be Lincoln visiting Madison. It was a pretty big surprise in Week 10 when Madison beat them late touchdown to win it 14-10. I think we're going to see another low-scoring game, maybe not that low-scoring, but something in the 20s. And Madison's a team I've talked about because I think they will be as good as anyone in the county next year. They've got so many talented sophomores and juniors. They start 20 underclassmen. So that's a team I'm looking ahead for. But I think just this year, when I put out the bracket breakdown, I think they can contend in this bracket and win Division I, and I'll pick them to beat Lincoln this week. In the other one, you've got Helix and El Camino. El Camino is a team that come playoff time, they always seem to compete. But Helix, Christian Washington's been unbelievable, 337 rushing yards, 5 touchdowns last week. As long as he's on the team, it's tough to pick against them. So I'm picking Madison against Helix, Madison against Helix in Division I there. And then in Division II, I think maybe some of the best games, you've got Mira Mesa and La Jolla. Mira Mesa is a team, another young team that's been playing well throughout the year. And then Scripps Ranch and Rancho Bernardo. I think this one might be a little lopsided. Scripps Ranch is a team that their only loss is to Mira Mesa. I'm sure they would love to redeem themselves in a possible championship game. And Rancho Bernardo's kind of snuck by 2 weeks in a row. They should have lost to Bishops on the last second field goal that hit off the upright. And then they were able to redeem themselves against rival Poway a week later. So I'll go Scripps Ranch and Mira Mesa. Pretty boring 1-2 again there, but I think that's what happens there. Division III, I think it could get interesting. I did pick Mount Carmel before when the brackets first came out to win this bracket, but Ramona, the way they've looked, they went last week as the 4th seed and beat West Hills 52-0 at home. West Hills was 11-0 coming into that game. So to do that at home, I think Ramona is definitely a team that will challenge Mount Carmel. I'll give Mount Carmel a 2-point victory here. I think it's going to come down to the last second. And I really trust their defense, but Ramona has really played well as the season gone on. Modern Day Catholic and Santa Fe Christian, a fun one here. Both teams are still undefeated at this point in the year, which is pretty rare. I just think Modern Day Catholic's so talented. If Santa Fe Christian gets behind early, they're really in trouble because they run the triple option, and it's just so hard to come up from behind if they're down a score or two. And Modern Day Catholic just has weapons all over the field, so many Division I players. Then in Division IV, Patrick Henry has been great all year. I think Del Norte will give them a good battle in this semifinal, but I like Patrick Henry to advance. And then in the other one, University City against Coronado. Coronado was really impressive last week. They played a Sweetwater team who in round one put up 73 points. In their matchup, they held them to zero. So clearly they're doing something right there on defense. But University City, Samuel Cooper, transferred in from Lincoln, has been great rushing the ball, really good dual threat quarterback there. And I think he gets them past them and into a rematch against Patrick Henry. That would be a league battle for them. And yeah, so that's Division IV. And then the last one for Division V here, you've got, it's a little interesting because you've got bigger schools that have fallen down into Division V based on how their previous few seasons have been. In San Diego, they do it over your previous three seasons, so 50%, 30, and 20. And so a school like Fallbrook that's got a bigger enrollments down playing in Division V, they've got to make the drive out to Blythe to take on Palo Verde Valley. Palo Verde can really run the ball, but I just think Fallbrook, a team with a bigger roster and just they've played better teams throughout the season, despite having to make that long trip, I think they get it done in the one semi. Then on the other side, this is a game that I'm just not sure is going to be all that close. Mission Bay is hosting Calexico, and Calexico went on the road to Holtville and got a win last week. But I think Mission Bay, their quarterback, Clash Orsborn, has been putting up huge numbers here for 4 years for Mission Bay. And I think they will see Fallbrook here in the Division V final.
Beautiful. Thank you, Bodie. It's time for an LA City Section Minute brought to you by me. In the Open Division, I like Birmingham over Banning. Birmingham going on the road and beating Banning. Jacob Galloway, Banning's star running back, is out. So Birmingham, they've steamrolled every City Section opponent this year. I think they will beat Banning. And then on the other end, Palisades and San Pedro, really tough game to pick. Palisades has been oh so good this year. Their issue, they haven't played anyone. San Pedro's had a little bit of a tougher schedule, and they are at home. It can get a little chilly. I guess it can get chilly at Palisades, too, because both schools are right on the water, so maybe that's a bad point. I was going to say it can get cold down there. I've been the victim of very cold temperatures at San Pedro, but scratch that. I'm taking San Pedro, even if it's 100 degrees. I just think they're a little bit better. In Division I, Dorsey, they're the one seed, and they've just been getting off to these really slow starts. They should have lost last week to Cleveland, a phantom offensive pass interference call. I thought Rob Cleveland. Dorsey people won't want to hear that. I'm sorry. The video I saw looked very bad. I'm taking Canoga Park. You can't get off to a slow start against them. And then in the other semifinal in Division I, Reseda, who won this title in 2019, is on the road against Venice. In my bracket breakdown, I picked Venice to win the whole thing, so I can't pick against them right now. Angelo Gasca, the Venice coach, is a fantastic coach. Not that Alonso Areola isn't for Reseda, but I just think Venice, they've had some unfortunate breaks in the past, especially against Reseda in 2019. This game came right down to the wire. Venice at home, I think they get a victory over the reigning D1 champ, and then they'll go on to win the whole thing. I'm still riding with the Gondoliers. And now that I've moved to Santa Monica, Venice is right next to my house, Venice High School, so it's the new hometown high school for me. How can you pick against the hometown team? Okay, less than a minute on the Zoom. I think we got to wrap this up. So guys, thanks so much. This has been great. For Bodie DeSilva and Lance Smith, I'm Connor Morissette. We'll see you next time.